This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's a gorgeous Saturday morning in November. Yes, we are in November, and we are happy to welcome back Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Aaron, you couldn't stay away.
I couldn't stay away.
Yeah. No, we're happy to have you answering your questions this morning. The number is 314-436-7900. And we also have an 800 number. It is mandatory. You dial the 1-800-925-1120. Again, the local number is 314-436-7900. What's shaking over at the Shaw Nature Reserve?
Well, this weekend we actually have our annual art show. It's a nature-inspired art show that is held at the Dana Brown Overnight Center, which is a part of Shaw Nature Reserve that is normally not open to the public. So it's a really great opportunity to see a beautiful landscape that, again, most visitors don't get to see on a regular basis.
What does that look like? What does that mean?
So the Dana Brown Overnight Center is a overnight center that has an assembly building. There are several cabins that are dormitory style. And so the cabins and the assembly hall, they're all opened, and then vendors set up, artists set up, and display all of their artwork. And it's all nature-inspired, and it's from, so we have jewelers, we have painters, we have basket makers, sculptors, you name it, there's something out there for you.
So it's art inspired by nature, so it could be a painting, could be, you said, basket. It's not necessarily like sticks and glue.
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. All right. Let's begin with the phone calls. Ann, you're up first on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Yes, Aaron. I had some zinnias this year that were particularly beautiful, and I want to save the seeds for next year. What I need to know is, how is the best place to store them? Where? And so should they be outside, inside? What should I package them in?
Really great question. So the best place to store any kind of seed is going to be in a cool and dry space. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll take the seed that I want to save, and I'll put it in a small, like an envelope, something that does have a little bit of air movement through it that is porous. So an envelope or one of those small little manila packets, and then place them in someplace, again, cold and dry. So a lot of times I'll stick them in a closet that is away from a heating element of any kind.
A closet that is away from what?
A heating element, so away from your heater, your main...
Okay, would a garage be too cold?
No, a garage should work, as long as your garage isn't... The only concern is that if the temperature of a garage does go below freezing, especially with some of the annuals, sometimes that can affect their germination in the spring. So especially if your garage is a little bit heated, then that would help.
Okay, so I'm probably better off leaving in a cool place in my house then, right?
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Ann, at 314-436-7900. What sort of things are you thinking about now that we're into November in terms of gardening and planting, thinking about the spring?
Yeah, so there's still a lot you can do in the garden in November. So some people will be cutting back their gardens currently to kind of spruce them up and for the winter months. Other people might be raking out leaves or even planting. So you can still plant trees and shrubs. Even though we do have cooler temperatures, trees and shrubs can be planted as long as the ground temps don't, we don't get freezing ground temperatures.
Do we have cooler temperatures? It's like 70 today. It's going to be 75 this week.
Yes, but if our overnight temps tend to still be in the 40s, mm-hmm. it is definitely cooler. And so those most perennials and most trees and shrubs that are not evergreens are starting to go dormant and
what about leaves in terms of raking them up, and what's the best thing to do with them? I mean, should you put them in piles or compost them? What?
Well, the best thing to do is let nature run its course. So wherever they fall, let them stay and break down naturally. With that said, a lot of people do prefer to remove their leaves from lawns and certain parts of their garden. And so I would suggest pushing them to a place on your property where they can naturally decompose. We have a lot of critters that overwinter in leaf material, especially oak leaves. And so we do encourage people to save some of their leaves in an area of their yard where they don't mind if there's some piles or a little thicker matting of those leaves.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Janice, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have cheese chives in my vegetable garden. They have gone to seed and they have spread. How can I get rid of them?
Yeah, so chives are kind of one of those plants that it's easier sometimes just to dig them out than anything. So if you can dig them out and make sure to get all of the little bulblets, that will make your life much easier. Sometimes if a little bulblet is left in the ground, then they'll multiply.
Very good. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, Norma, you are on with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve.
Good morning. I have roughly 40 calla lily bulbs. I've been planting and replanting them in pots every year, but it's getting harder and harder. Is there any way that I can plant them in the ground and have them survive?
There is, unfortunately, there's no guarantee that they're going to survive in the ground over winter. However, you can take some steps to try to protect them. So particularly mulching over wherever you have those bulbs will add a little bit of cushion and help insulate those bulbs. Another thing you can do is if those bulbs are planted closer to a building or something like even a sidewalk, anything that typically holds heat, that will also help to insulate the bulbs.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Moving right along this morning. 314-436-7900. Good questions so far. We'll take some more of them as we continue on the Garden Hotline. Stay tuned. It's the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. We are back on the Garden Hotline on KMOX. The number to call to ask a question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is 314-436-7900. Aaron, what are you doing at home in terms of any gardening, planting, trees, that kind of thing?
So what we're doing at home right now is spending a lot of time walking around the garden, really enjoying the colors, the art of decay, and watching our persimmons ripen. So we're really excited. They have not dropped yet. They're not ripe yet, but we're waiting. And we're hoping to get some before the raccoons do.
Before the raccoons?
Yes. Raccoons and possums absolutely love our native persimmons.
So what's the cycle for persimmons?
So,
I mean, are they, how, when do they
When do they ripen?
Yeah, when do they ripen?
So they usually ripen after the first frost. So any time now. However, I will say out at the Nature Reserve, we had a lot of persimmons ripening early. A lot of them were dropping earlier in October and the end of September. So that was a little early, and kind of suspect that maybe that was due to our drought conditions. But our trees at home have yet to drop their fruits. So we are very excited for those juicy fruits.
Okay. And how about for the spring? What things do you plant right now, considering the idea of having them bloom in the spring?
Yeah, so definitely people are planting a lot of bulbs. So tulips, narcissus, those can be planted on into the end of November, any spring blooming bulb. We're also doing a lot of seeding. So direct seeding starts for a lot of our native species. It starts in late fall and into winter. So we'll be doing a little bit of seeding out in the nature reserve. But also at home, I start stratifying seed that I want to germinate in the spring. And I've started doing that now. And stratification is when you take native seed and you put it into a mixture of usually a wetting agent like peat moss and sand, and then a sand mix with a little bit of water. And that helps to hold moisture and create a moist environment that when you put the seed with that stratification mix in the refrigerator, it mimics the outdoors. It mimics winter.
What about lawn care right now in terms of taking care of it, but also watering?
Yeah, that's a good question. So with how dry it's been, a lot of people have extended their irrigation timings much farther into the fall than normal. As far as how long to do that, really a lot of our warm season grasses like zoysia are starting to go dormant. They're browning out. Once that really starts, then irrigating isn't really necessary. For some of the cooler season grasses, you can continue irrigating a little bit, but you do start running into frosts this time of year, and that can be really hard on irrigation systems if they're still operating.
Okay. And as far as the Shaw Nature Reserve goes, what are you guys doing on a daily basis right now? I mean, I know you mentioned the art installation, the art show, but what else are you doing around the property? I think you had mentioned fires.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is prescribed fire season. And so we are mostly our ecological restoration team engages in a lot of this prescribed burning or prescribed fires. And so they are preparing their plans. They're laying down their fire lines. They're creating a safe environment for their team to engage in the prescribed fires. Our horticulture team is in the Whitmer Wildflower Garden. They're doing a lot of cutbacks. There's a lot of plant material in some of our areas that are more formal to keep it looking aesthetically very pleasing and a little more comfortable for people who are more traditional gardeners. And then we're also doing a lot of weeding. You know, winter weeds are up and going strong. The henbit, the dead nettle, it's all popping up. And so that green that you see out in gardens that looks really fresh, a lot of times those are winter weeds.
Winter weeds.
Winter weeds.
All right. Well, let's continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900. Time for you to get in line and ask your question of Aaron Goss as we continue with the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline minus the octopi. We have Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve here answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Elias, you're up next for Aaron. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about stiff-neck garlic. It is time to put them on the ground now?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe that you still can put them in the ground, although I feel like normally you plant garlic earlier in the year. I think that's usually in September. But I would say go ahead and try it. It is a bulb. It really usually they're not ready until June or July, so that should be plenty of time for them to develop in the ground.
Yeah, how much apart shall I put them, like 4 inches, 6 inches apart?
I think 6 inches is a good rule of thumb. So just think about if you want a bigger bulb, you want to make sure, like an end result bulb, you do want to make sure that there's plenty of room in between each plant in order for those bulbs to swell. So I think 6 inches should be plenty.
And how about between the rows, like if a foot or 2 feet?
Excuse me. I think you could do a foot should be fine. I don't think you need 6 feet. Again, you just need enough room between those plants to allow those bulbs to swell and get bigger. So if you're planting them in a row, 6 inches apart, and each row is about a foot apart from each other, that should be plenty.
Okay. My second question, I have 2 bald amaryllis. I cut the green. Mm-hmm. Shall I leave them in the pot or take it out and put them in a darker place to bloom, to flower? Because I read that you have to give them like 12 hours of darkness to bloom.
Yeah,
Is that true?
Yeah. Excuse me. They do like darkness. That does force them to after they've lost their green, then that's really why you're putting them in darkness, is to force them into dormancy. And then once you bring them back out, and usually people will use one of those bulb vases where the roots sit in water, and then you put them in light, and then they will force the bloom.
Oh, okay. All right. Shall I leave them in the pot and put them inside?
Yeah, definitely bring them inside. Don't leave them outside.
Yeah. And give him a water once a while, or leave it till Christmas?
Only after it starts blooming. You don't necessarily need the bulb to sit in soil. The roots will want to be in water if you want it to actually put on a bloom.
Okay. Thank you for the info.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900 is the number to call to get your question on the air with Aaron Goss. Aaron, how about new gardens? People planting new gardens right now, what kind of prep work mm-hmm. you need to do?
Yeah, so prepping a new garden, this is a really great time to get an area of your yard ready for a new garden. And so that's taking an area of the yard that either is currently has turf or maybe has some other vegetation that's undesirable. So there are several methods you can use. You can use the cardboard method, or also known as the lasagna method. You can also solarize. It's a little too cold currently to really be applying herbicide. Most of the herbicides, they need the active growing of plants in order to work. So if you're looking to build a new garden and have it ready by spring, the best thing to do is going to be string trim down the vegetation that's there, whether that's, again, turf or weeds or other vegetation. Lay down some cardboard. You only need really one layer of cardboard, and then about 3 inches or so of some sort of mulch on top of that. And that will starve out the vegetation underneath the cardboard and then be ready for planting next. That's really the nicest way to prepare the landscape. Another method that's not as aesthetically pleasing is using solarization, and that's where you're using a piece of usually black plastic, laying it down on the area in the footprint of the area that you want to prepare the ground, and then letting it sit for about 3 to 6 months. Over the winter, it doesn't get as hot, so you need a longer time. And then once that's ready and there's no vegetation underneath the plastic that's still growing, then you can remove the plastic and start planting.
Okay, those are good tips. Way to get started anyway in terms of a garden. Let's go back to the phones. Paul, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have a 5-foot banana tree. I wanted to know how to winterize it.
Yeah, a lot of people with banana trees, what they'll do is they will cut them back in the wintertime, because a lot of times banana trees will die back to the ground. And so people will go ahead and cut them back, kind of treat them a little bit like a canna. And then it should push back out in the spring.
Should you cut it down all the way to the ground?
I would cut it all the way down to the ground, maybe leave about an inch above the ground so you know where that tree is, where the banana is. But yeah, most people will cut them all the way to the ground.
So you cut them down to the ground, but should you put mulch on it or something to prevent a deep freeze from it?
That's a great idea, yeah. Insulating it with mulch or leaves, something, or even frost cloth should help to make sure that it makes it through the winter.
Like 6 inches or how much mulch?
Yeah, I don't know if you need 6 inches, maybe 3 to 4 inches at most. I mean, at the same time, I don't know if too much mulch is necessarily a bad thing. It just as long as you remove that mulch or spread it out a little bit once spring comes so that that banana tree can still push up through the mulch.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Paul. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. And Shirley, what's your question for Aaron Goss?
Yes, I have a daisy bushes. They're perennial. And I'd like to know if I can cut them back. They're sort of a late bloomer daisy bush.
Yeah, are they still blooming by chance?
No, not the frost got them, hun. They were almost dying before the frost got them, you know.
Yeah, if they're done blooming, then by all means, you can go ahead and cut them back.
You know how far you cut them back? Because these got, bigger than a bushel basket.
yeah, they can get kind of big. So those you can cut all the way back to the ground. Most perennials, they die back into the winter months, but their roots... Their roots remain alive. So just go ahead and cut the tops all the way back to the ground, and then it'll push back out in the next
Week. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Shirley. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Tell me about honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle.
Oh, boy.
That's a Halloween horror. No.
It's invasive.
So, yes, so honeysuckle shrubs, there are several of them, but most people will recognize honeysuckle because it is one of the few plants that remain green through the late fall. So if you look out in the woods or you look out in a field and you see that there's shrubs that are still green and it's at the end of November or mid-November and all the other leaves have dropped, that's probably bush honeysuckle. And it is an invasive plant. We are seeing that it's taking over a lot of our natural areas. And what's problematic about that is because it leafs out, it's one of the earliest plants to leaf out, it's one of the latest plants to drop their leaves. And so it creates a pretty solid coverage, so it doesn't allow a lot of sunlight penetration down to the soil level. And so a lot of plants end up getting, a lot of desirable plants, native plants, get crowded, not crowded out, but they get shaded out over time.
When it comes to invasive species, I've kind of found that don't a lot of them either smell good or look pretty?
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with some of our invasive species were brought over as ornamental plants. Now, that may have been 50 years ago, but still, bush honeysuckle was brought over as an ornamental plant. Because it has wonderfully smelling flowers, you can actually do quite a bit with honeysuckle. You can make a syrup out of their flowers. Yes, there are quite a few invasive species that are quite beautiful and that smell really good.
They have, but they're the devil.
I don't know if I go as far as to say the devil, but yes, they can cause a lot of issues, especially in our natural areas, and so they are a concern. And so that's why you all may hear a lot about honeysuckle sweeps or honeysuckle hacks that happen in the fall and into the winter.
Now, exactly what does that mean?
So that means that you get a big group of people together with a bunch of sharp objects and you go out into the woods or into fields and you cut back honeysuckle. And so it's always a group effort. A lot of times it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way for families to get out into the wild and kind of give back to our landscape.
Sharp objects. Are we talking machetes here? Or what are we talking about?
Machetes.
Okay.
Right. Sawzaws.
Hardcore.
We also do use loppers, tree saws, and sometimes even chainsaws if they are particularly big shrubs.
You're right. Halloween horrors. We're back to that. All right. Let's continue with the phone calls after a short break. The number to call to get your question on the air is 314-436-7900. What's on your mind as we enter early November in terms of your garden for next year, what you should be doing, winterizing, all those kinds of things, whatever you have on your mind, let us know. We will continue in just a moment on KMOX. There is nothing wrong on a Saturday morning with a little Simon and Garfunkel. Always like to have it in my life anyway. Aaron Goss is from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Off air, we were talking about daylight saving time and the time change that's going to happen tonight, technically tomorrow morning at 2 a.m., we're going to get an extra hour of sleep, which is beautiful. But the origination of this whole concept was to benefit farmers, to give them more time during the day of sunlight. And these days, people are talking about it. I'm not specifically going to ask you a question about it. I just thought it's an interesting topic in terms of now people are saying our economy is different. We don't have an agricultural economy the same way we used to. And so maybe it's time for us to forget this whole thing and just leave the clocks alone. I think it's kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah, it is definitely an interesting topic. And I didn't realize that that daylight savings time was a result of trying to help farmers out.
Yeah, originally that was the initiation of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, we don't have that same sort of economy anymore. Yeah. So I'm curious what people think about that. But let's continue with questions about gardening. Annual seeds versus perennial seeds. It seems like a basic question, but, you know, I'm basic. So tell me what it means.
Yeah, so annual is key here. So an annual produces, it germinates, it grows, it flowers, it produces its own set of seed all in one year. So most annual seeds are going to germinate usually in the spring, and then they're going to produce their new set of seeds later in the season. And so most annual seeds end up, we throw them out, not throw them out in the trash, but we throw them out in the garden, or we set them up to germinate in pots, usually in early spring, right around the last frost date. For perennial seeds, that can be a little different. Perennial seeds are highly diverse in how they like to germinate. Certain perennial seeds, you can treat them like annual seeds. They need light to germinate. They don't have a long, what's called a stratification period. They don't need to necessarily sit outside over the winter months. And so you can also put those out in the garden in early spring. Hmm. There are other perennial seeds, however, that they really need to go through either something that mimics the conditions of winter, or they need to sit outside in winter. And so sometimes we will be sowing perennial seeds in the fall and winter months.
All right, I've got another question. What is deer rub?
So deer rub is something that occurs in male deers. So not deers,
deer.
So deer rub. So what happens is deer develop what's called velvet on their antlers, and velvet is actually essential to the hardening of antlers. And so it's kind of like it looks like velvet, like a dark kind of reddish brown velvet all over deer antlers. And so they get to a point where it's time to rub that off. And so they end up rubbing on anything and everything that they can find. And a lot of times they choose smaller trees to rub the velvet off of because it's easier to get their antlers in and maneuver the young tree in order to rub the antlers. But what happens is that in the process of rubbing on these small trees, it rubs the bark off of trees.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, long-term, it can cause long-term damage on a lot of trees. And so while technically the deer rub season is coming to an end. It really is like gets going in September and part of October. We're now going to see the results of deer rub. And so going out and looking at your landscape and seeing if you see places where deer have rubbed the bark off of trees, and then taking steps to either prune off damaged branches or to protect them or start making plans to protect them for next year.
You can't really deter the deer from doing this, I assume. Or
actually,
you
can. There are methods where you use both rebar and some sort of, sometimes people use construction fencing, but particularly rebar can be very effective, especially on younger trees. So sometimes you have to use really larger pieces of rebar. But if you put rebar around a 4 rebar rods around a small tree in a way that the deer can't get their antlers through, then that can stop them from rubbing. It's not the most aesthetically pleasing look, but it is better than actually better looking than setting up that orange construction fencing.
Yes, definitely better looking in that respect. I wrote down a few notes here, just questions. And another one I have is, I believe this is an issue coming up, chronic wasting disease.
Yeah, so chronic wasting disease is a disease that impacts our deer populations in Missouri, Illinois, in Arkansas. Missouri is one of the states that they mandate monitoring, this chronic wasting disease monitoring in November. And so there's a weekend that's coming up. I believe it is the 17th and 18th?
16th
and 17th, yeah. Yes, of November. And what happens is anyone who goes out and hunts for deer, they are required to bring whatever deer they shoot to a monitoring station in order to test the deer for chronic wasting disease. And chronic wasting disease is exactly what it sounds like. It's a terrible affliction on the deer. They basically stop eating and drinking, and so they starve to death.
Wow, that's not good.
No, it's not. And it is, we don't yet know if it will jump species. So we don't yet know if it can affect humans. And so we do encourage people who are hunting that weekend not to eat the meat from their hunt, particularly because we don't know if it will spread to humans.
Well, that is good information. I'm full of questions this morning, but this show is a long-running show, and it's at your service. It's about your questions. And the number to call is 314-436-7900. Mary, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I heard you have a lot of bad things to say about honeysuckle, but what if you wanted to plant honeysuckle? I have a corner of my yard up against a shed that I think I really would like to have a batch of honeysuckle. Where do I get it? You know, how do I plant it? Spring, fall? What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so you will most likely have a really hard time finding honeysuckle. It is a plant that is really no longer available in the retail plant trade, mainly because it has been so economically and environmentally devastating. However, if you are willing to consider an alternative to honeysuckle, to the honeysuckle that's invasive, there are some native honeysuckles there's some honeysuckles that are native to the East Coast that are just as, that smell even better, and that a lot of people, again, have used for a long time. Those honeysuckles, If you do an internet search for native honeysuckle, then it'll give you some ideas for what you could find and plant. But unfortunately, our invasive honeysuckle, you probably are not going to be able to find. If you go with one of those native honeysuckles that are native to the East Coast, those usually you can plant in the fall or you can plant in the spring, just as long as the soil is not frozen. You should be able to, you can dig a hole and plant that shrub.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I grew up on the East Coast for the most part, and I do remember the smell of the honeysuckle.
Yeah.
So that's a totally different species? Probably.
Unfortunately, I'm not 100% sure about that. I know they're related. And a lot of people, when they assume, when they tie honeysuckle to that highly floriferous scent, they're actually thinking of our eastern native honeysuckles, because that's what people really grew up with. Now, there's definitely some of the invasive species that have wonderful scents too, but the ones from the East Coast are actually there. They have a better scent, more potent scent.
All right, let's get another question in here. Lindy, you're up next with Aaron.
Yes, midsummer, I purchased some purple fountain grass, and it was listed as perennial, but a friend recently told me that it's a perennial only down to 20 degrees. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if I need to dig it and bring it in a house, in the basement.
Yeah, so that can be... It can be challenging sometimes because a lot of times growers will mark something as being hardy here, and it may only be kind of marginally hardy. So, like you said, if it gets below 20, you might lose that fountain grass. A couple things you can do is you can protect it while it's in the ground. Again, kind of mulch around it or cover it with leaves. You can even use a frost cloth.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. As far as bringing it in inside, I'm not sure that it'll overwinter inside.
Okay, Lindy, thanks for calling in. The number to call, we're going to take a break for the news, but you can go ahead and get on the phone and get in line for Aaron Goss. It's 314-436-7900, and she is from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Lots of experience with everything in nature. It's fun to have you on, Aaron. We appreciate it, and we'll continue with your questions as the Garden Hotline rolls on KMOX.
Sitting on a sofa on a Sunday afternoon, going to the candidates debate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Laugh about it, shout about it, when you've got to choose. Every way you look at it, you lose. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Our nation turns its lonely eye.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. This show has been around for more than three decades, and it's still going because of you. It is an at-your-service show, and it's about your questions and things you want to get answered pertaining to your garden, to trees, to the environment. Aaron Goss is here, and her expertise comes from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Tell us a little bit about the Shaw Nature Reserve overall.
So the Shaw Nature Reserve is located out in Gray Summit, which is about 30 miles southwest of St. Louis, right off of 44. If you are familiar with where Purina Farms is located, we are just the opposite direction on Highway 100. We have over 19 miles of hiking trails. We have the Whitmer Wildflower Garden, which is a demonstration garden for native plants, located pretty much right in the middle of the reserve. It's a great place to bring your family, go for a stroll, have a picnic, and view both native plants in a garden setting, but also out in nature.
So is it mainly for the public in that way, or are there research efforts going on? Do you have partnerships with other entities in the area working on projects?
We do. We of course, we're open to the public and we are serving the public, but we are also engaging in a lot of research. We have research scientists that are based out of Shaw Nature Reserve. We also work with the researchers at the Missouri Botanical Garden on a variety of different subjects. We also work with organizations like Quail Forever and the Missouri Department of Conservation. We work with the Department of Natural Resources. We work with a lot of different partners on different research projects. Those research projects can range from bat habitat, which we actually have a fairly large bat population on the nature reserve at the nature reserve along the Merrimack River. We also are looking at climate adaptability in some of our native plants. There's work being done on grassland restoration. And then I'm sure a ton of other research efforts that I'm not remembering right now, and that I'm just not familiar with.
Well, you mentioned bats. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other animals that you would find at the Shaw Nature Reserve?
We have a wonderful collection of animals that live on the reserve. We have your normal suspects, so the raccoons, the possums, the armadillos. We also have lots of groundhogs. If anybody has experienced groundhogs out there, they can be kind of a pest. We have a ton of deer, lots and lots of deer. But we also have bobcats. We have
bobcats
that live in the reserve. We do not advertise where their den is located, but we do know that they are out there and that they are active.
Hmm. What exactly is a bobcat? I mean, do you know?
So a bobcat is a wild feline species. It looks a lot like a domesticated cat.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I've seen them, and I'm just curious about their backstory, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about bobcats, besides the fact that they are slightly larger than most domesticated species. They do have unique colorations. And they were at one time, I'm pretty sure, considered endangered in this area.
All right. Well, the phone number to call is 314-436-7900 to ask your question of Aaron Goss. Let's go next to Jackie. Good morning, Jackie.
Yes. I was wondering, I have canna bulbs, and I had them in containers, but now I'd like to put them in the ground. Is there a way of doing that in St. Louis?
So canna bulbs are going to be kind of hit and miss if you put them in the ground and try to overwinter them. What I would suggest is taking your bulbs and if you put them in the ground, just make sure that you mulch around those bulbs pretty well. You may find that half of them come back next year and half of them don't. It's kind of hit or miss. But just make sure if you put them in the ground to put some mulch or leaves or frost cloth, something around them in order to help insulate those bulbs from our freezing temperatures, just in case we get a really, really cold winter.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jackie. Coming up next, we have Kathy. Good morning. Hello.
I have a question for Aaron. We have a lot of autumn olive in the woods that live around us, and we're taking it down slowly, but I was wondering what she thought of planting witch hazel in some of the areas.
Oh, witch hazel is a beautiful shrub. That's wonderful. And it also blooms at a time when a lot of other plants are not blooming. So it's both great for humans, but also really great for wildlife. So that is definitely a shrub that I would encourage you to place in replace the autumn olive with. Provided it's the witch hazels do need some extra moisture if they're sitting in full sun. If it's a little shadier environment, they should be just fine.
Okay. It's along a tree line, so we're trying to save some of the black walnut trees that we have and, you know, the better trees and taking that other brush out. Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. And then I also would encourage you to, if you haven't already, if you do end up with, if you are not able to remove all those autumn olives next year, go out and harvest those berries because they're surprisingly pretty tasty.
Oh, wow.
Get them before the birds do.
That's why the birds and the deer eat them, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. The number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Aaron Goss from Shaw Nature Reserve is here to answer your questions. We're into hour number two of the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is your expert today answering your questions at 314-436-7900. You know what? I want to clear something up. Last hour, we talked about daylight saving time, and it is believed that this had something to do with farmers. But we had a call, and we did a little homework, and that is actually not true. It is not about farmers. It wasn't about farmers. However, that was the story that was told because the Germans did it first, and this was during World War I. And the U.S. wasn't going to say, oh, what a great idea the Germans have. Let's do that. So the story got around that it was for farmers, and it has persisted until today. But actually, an expert at Suffolk University says the idea was originally authored, as many ideas were, by Ben Franklin. He suggested that Parisians could save a lot of money on candles if they got up earlier in the morning rather than sleeping in. So that was the germination of it. The Germans were actually the first ones to do it, but the whole idea was to save energy for the war effort during World War I. So just to clarify, that's interesting. I mean, I always had that perception that it was farming, but that was the story that was told back then. And I guess it just passed on through generations till now, till 2024, as I'm sitting here on a radio gardening show where I passed it along as a truth when it's actually not true. So I feel better about getting that off my chest. I was also looking at, Aaron, you were talking about honeysuckle hacks. Mm-hmm. There's one today.
Yes.
At Crestwood Park.
Yes.
From 2 to 5. You know about this?
I do. And if anybody's interested in finding out more information about honeysuckle hacks, or also known as honeysuckle sweeps, visit Open Space Council or Open Space STL. Their website lists all the different honeysuckle hacks that are happening around the St. Louis region. You can also check in with the Missouri Botanical Gardens Biodiversity website, and that's biodiverse, and then citystl.org. They also list all of the different honeysuckle hacks on their website.
The number to call for your question is 314-436-7900. Aaron, you were mentioning that there might be some other events coming up at Shaw?
Yes, that is correct. So the first weekend in December is an event that we always are excited about. We start prepping for it fairly early, but it's called the Whitmire Wonder Lights. And that's a chance to walk through the Whitmire Wildflower Garden decorated in lots of different lights, a little bit like the glow, but not as much going on. It's a little bit more of a romantic feel, but you get to walk through the garden after dusk. So it's quite a magical experience.
And speaking of lights, isn't the Garden Glow about to kick off soon at the Botanical Garden?
It sure is. I'm pretty sure tickets are on sale, and it starts November 16th and runs through January 4th.
That is a must-see for any St. Louisan during the holiday season.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. And they also offer adult hot chocolates, which super tasty.
Oh, they're so good. The peppermint ones.
Yeah.
Little liqueur in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're so good. Let's go to Linda. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Oh, that was fast. Thank you. I had a suggestion for the lady that called about, I think she said red grasses. I don't know exactly the name of it, but she was wondering about digging them and putting them in the basement. But I have a foxtail fern that I've had now for about 3 or 4 years. And I tried it down the basement. It's just in a pot. It's always been in a pot. And it wasn't looking good. So what I did was I just kept it in my garage. And the garage isn't heated, but I put it like back to the back of the garage so it's not so affected by the open garage. And then if it gets really cold, like maybe down 20 or below, I just take an old bath towel and wrap around it. And like I say, it's been doing well. It's beautiful. It's been out there for that length of time. So maybe she could do something like that if she was, you know, afraid of losing, if she didn't have too many. But I just wanted to make that suggestion to her. She's still listening.
Yeah, Linda, that's a great suggestion. And garages are a fantastic place to overwinter some of those marginally hardy plants. Sometimes in the some of these plants do need to kind of go dormant in the wintertime, and so bringing them inside the house is long-term not ideal. And so a garage is a great idea. So thank you so much, Linda. That was a great suggestion.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. 314-436-7900. I had one question from my list here that I forgot to ask you about tilling.
Oh, sure.
Tell me about the trickiness of tilling.
Yes. So a lot of people have, they engage in tilling. It's kind of part of our gardening toolbox, and it's been used over the years to prepare ground for new planting. The issue with tilling, and tilling does have its place in our toolbox, but the issue with tilling is that if you already have a very weedy garden and then you till that garden up, then all that's going to do is put the seed, the weed seed, it's going to bring all of those weed seeds up to the very top. And so that those weeds are going to end up germinating. So a lot of times when people till, unfortunately, the result is that you end up getting more weeds than you actually wanted. Now, some people will use that as a method. So you till, you let the weeds germinate, you let them get to a certain height, and then you till again. And you kind of do that a few times, and that will exhaust the seed bank. But anytime you till, you are, in a way, potentially destroying the structure of the soil itself.
All right, let's go next to Sandy. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about diseases in the soil. I have an area of ground cover that I have been nurturing for many years. When I originally planted it about 20 years ago with vinca and ivy, it was beautiful. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little longer, something happened, and there's a section where the soil does not support any plant life. And I've tried lots of things. So I've been looking online, and what I'm reading about is a possible fungus in the soil that's affecting whatever it is that I plant in there. And the recommendation was to cover it with plastic to heat the soil up to 140 degrees or higher to kill the fungus. Well, I haven't had a chance to do it up to now, and I was thinking today's a beautiful day for me to get out in the yard. I thought I might apply a fungicide and then cover those sections with a black plastic and let it winter over, and then maybe even into the spring and summer when the soil warms up. What is your suggestion about that? Do you think it's a good idea to do it now or what?
So, Sandy, you just described the solarization process very well. So your approach sounds spot on. The only part of it that I might just hesitate at is the application of a fungicide, only because a lot of those fungicides, if you don't know what is in the soil, that fungicide might not even work. And the other reason is that the solarization process, especially if you are willing to keep it on longer into the spring, so that soil can can really be cooked, is that solarization process, it kills almost everything in the soil, both good and bad. And so that's the beauty of solarization, but it's also a drawback, is that all life in that soil will be kind of cooked if you do attain that temperature. So if
mm-hmm. I'm not seeing any growth of any kind of mm-hmm. anything, and I've planted it with Vinca three separate times over probably the last 5 or 6 years, even allowing the soil to sit fallow in between in case there was something that needed the plant to feed on. But that didn't seem to work either, because this last spring I had let it sit fallow for at least one season, maybe two, and I decided to go ahead and try to plant again, and nothing took. Everything died. So I don't know that I'm concerned about killing, quote unquote, everything in the soil, unless you can tell me what might be good in that soil that I might be damaging, because the soil doesn't support anything.
Yeah, so in soil, there are a lot of microinvertebrates and good bacteria that occur, and sometimes good fungi that also occur in the soil. And these are necessary in order for plants to thrive. And so a lot of times plant roots will have relationships with certain types of bacteria, soil bacteria, certain types of soil fungi. And so it helps the plants to, those fungi and those bacteria help plants to take up nutrients into their soil. So that's what I mean by it cooks everything in the soil, is it cooks those good organisms too. Like you said, you may not have those good organisms anymore, and so it doesn't matter. Now, those soil organisms will be replenished over time. And so, like I said before, your plan to solarize that area sounds spot on. And if you can keep that solarization going, keep the plastic on through, say, April and into May, then that will really complete that process and make sure that everything in that soil has been cooked, including the potentially bad soil fungus.
So even though it's going to be winter and we're going to have cold weather and the ground will ultimately freeze, you think the black plastic will heat the soil up enough mm-hmm. to do that? So now would be an okay time to do that?
Yeah, now is a perfect time. What happens is that you just need to keep that black plastic on for longer than normal.
Okay.
Normally, it would only take about 3 months to solarize an area, but in wintertime, we need sometimes up to 6 months because it is colder.
Okay, well, that's good, because today's going to be a beautiful day, and that's exactly what I wanted to do. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you for calling, Sandy. Great question and a really interesting topic to bring up this morning. What is your question for Aaron Goss? Time is running out. We're in the last half hour of the Garden Hotline. The number is 314-436-7900. We will continue with your phone calls in just a moment on KMOX. Good gardening. That is not me saying that. That is Mike Miller saying that in a note on the GoFundMe page that he and his wife Tracy have dealing with his epilepsy and health issues this year. The name of the page is Mike's Epilepsy. And they update it every once in a while. So I found this update from this week, and it starts, good gardening, and welcome to our breezy fall. This is Mike writing this. I'm still dealing with the impact of epilepsy. Balance and movement continue to be difficult, although there is progress of positive nature. I was able to mow our sloped front yard this time for the first time since the fall of last year. Wow. Lots of leaves from our maple trees and from Christie Park. It's been great talking with you on this Halloween Eve. And, of course, he signs it off. Tip of the trowel. Thank you, Mike. We're glad to hear that there is some progress, Mike. We appreciate you letting us know, because I know listeners have been following his progress throughout the last few months, and it's great to hear that he's actually mowing the sloped front yard for the first time. So that's great. Our number is 314-436-7900. If you have a question for our expert today, who is Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, Jimmy, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. If you take the black plastic and cook the soil, when you take the plastic off, would it be worthwhile digging compost?
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To the soil to help restore it.
Yes, that is a wonderful approach. Adding some sort of organic material back in, like compost or a leaf compost, even worm castings, anything that will get the that will encourage the microbes to start the good microbes to start working again.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in. At your service, it's the Garden Hotline. Aaron, I'm going down some of the things I jotted down earlier in the show, and one of them was poison ivy. Mm-hmm. What's the deal with poison ivy this time of year?
Yeah, so a lot of people forget about poison ivy this time of year. Once the leaves drop, it's like out of sight, out of mind. But just remember, if you are cleaning up your leaves in your yard, there may be poison ivy leaves in the leaf litter, and so their oils are still active, and they can still give you a rash. And so I advise you to go ahead and make sure to wear long sleeves if you are gathering leaves or working in your garden. And just take it from personal experience. I have put leaves on tarps. Never seen a poison ivy anywhere, and once, you know, dragging the leaves off the tarps, putting in the place where we were putting the leaves, and then dragging that tarp back, putting the tarp on my arm, walking away, and then, you know, a week later, I've developed poison ivy on my arms. And so just a reminder that wearing long sleeves in the fall when you're working outside is actually really beneficial, because it can help provide a layer of protection from things like poison ivy.
So you're talking about a situation where you can't actually see it.
Correct.
So you're reaching your arm in and there it is.
Yes.
And poison ivy is the worst.
It is not fun.
I hate it.
And never, ever, ever burn poison ivy.
Oh,
so not everybody knows that, but if it actually is burned and those oils vaporize and they get into the air and then you inhale it, just imagine that poison ivy that, you know, we see on our arms and our skin, imagine that in your throat or your mouth.
Do not want to.
No.
What was I going to? Oh, yeah. It's also prescribed burn season.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about earlier training for that.
Yes.
Can you explain what you mean?
Yes. So there are actual training opportunities for landowners and the general public to go through a prescribed burn training. The Missouri Department of Conservation, they on their website under events and specifically landowner owner events, they will list the different prescribed burn trainings that they offer. And a lot of times they offer them at least a couple times a month throughout the fall and into the winter. And then they're all over the state of Missouri. So if you live out in Franklin County, there will be a prescribed burn training near you. If you live out in St. Charles County, there's usually a prescribed burn near you. And even in the city of St. Louis, there are opportunities to engage in prescribed burn training within the city and just right outside of the city in the St. Louis County.
How long does the prescribed burn season last?
So it usually lasts from November on into sometimes into March. A lot of times burns occur earlier in the season, not always later in the season. You don't want to wait too terribly long, particularly because we do start getting into some of the seasons where birds are starting to lay their eggs, grassland birds. So we do have to be mindful of that. So usually it's earlier in the winter months, so November, December, January.
And how do you know when it's accomplished? I mean, because it seems like that would be a difficult thing to assess necessarily. What is kind of what are some of the standards to go, oh, okay, we're done prescribed burning?
Yeah, so usually it is weather dependent and it's also time of year dependent. Once you start seeing new growth pushing up, especially if it's a grassland, you know, then you're maybe not wanting to burn. It also, certain trees are affected by burning. So, we don't want to burn too late in the season because of sap flow and different issues with trees. But in terms of whether to know if a burn is successful or complete, if you've ever seen a ditch burn, so I grew up in the country where mm-hmm. we burned our ditches. You know, my dad went out with a blowtorch and just burned the ditch. And
With a blowtorch.
And whenever it was, when we knew it was burned, it was the fire had burned out. The ground was, you know, pretty much charred. And it was a moderately fast burn, but with not too much smoke.
Not too much smoke. Why is that? Or?
A lot of times the smoke is what is potentially a health hazard or a physical hazard. So if you imagine, if you all know where Shaw Nature Reserve is, it is located right next to Interstate 44.
Mm-hmm.
So when our restoration team engages in those prescribed fires, they have to make sure that all of the fire district around knows, and they have to make sure that the moisture levels and is low enough that it's not going to encourage more smoke, and that the wind is blowing from a direction that's not going to blow that smoke onto 44. Because thick fire, smoke fire on 44 could be very, very dangerous.
Absolutely.
I mean, we had that huge pile up on I-55 due to dust. I mean,
dust from the mines,
right,
and other places. Fog causes those situations,
yeah.
Or 50 car pileups. Yeah. A lot of things to think about when you're doing those things. And fire is obviously dangerous, and you controlling it is not the simplest thing, which is why you have training.
Exactly.
Good to hear that. Also, another question is about foliage this time of year. Because of the drought, it seemed like we have maybe later with the peak and maybe not quite as vibrant of colors. What have you seen at the Shaw Nature Reserve?
Yeah, that sounds about right. We are now kind of in our peak time of the year. We are still seeing several of our tree species turning that lovely red, the red maples. Some of our oaks are turning reds. Viburnums, dogwoods, those are all kind of that pinkish red hue. We have our sumacs and witch hazels and some other shrubs that are turning more of an orangish yellow. But we have a lot of other tree species that have already dropped their leaves. Our pawpaw leaves are gone. A lot of the persimmon leaves are gone. And a lot of some of the oaks have already dropped their leaves too. So we're just not quite seeing the the vibrance that we normally see. However, on those kind of foggy, moody days where maybe we have a little overcast, the garden is beautiful. I know a lot of people focus in on tree leaves, but if you think about some of our native grasses, they can turn those same colors. So some of our native grasses also turn kind of a reddish purple. They also turn kind of an orangish bronze. We get yellows and butterscotch colors. I mean, it's pretty fantastic. And this is the time of year where it is super moody in the garden.
Moody in the garden. Moody, I love that phrase. That's awesome, Aaron. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. We have one more opportunity for you to ask your question this morning, 314-436-7900. We'll get to your calls after a short break. It's slow. A beautiful noise. That is Neil Diamond Show in town. We are going to continue with your phone calls now for Aaron Goss. Vicki, you're up next.
Yes. I have a neighbor who has a large oak tree in the front of his house. And, of course, I get the leaves and the acorns. I can deal with the leaves, but how do I go about ridding the lawn of the acorns?
Those acorns can be quite tricky. So some people will, they'll pick up the acorns a lot like they'll pick up sweet gum balls. And they will, if you buy one of those round, they're like a ball on a stick. And that ball is springy. And when you roll across the ground, it like picks up those acorns and holds them internally inside the ball. And then you can collect a bunch of acorns and then put them in like a bucket or something. So that's one approach. Another approach is that if you can get the acorns before they start breaking apart, like before you start walking on them or before the mower mows over them, those can sometimes be fairly easy to rake up using a soft or a hard rake, and then you can scoop them up. But once they start to break down, once you like walk on them or you roll over them with the lawnmower, then it's much harder to actually pick those acorns up. So if you can get them sooner rather than later, either using that tool that will pick them up or raking them up and then using some sort of scoop, that should help to remove the acorns.
All right, good question, Vicki. Let's go to Caroline next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Okay, about the poison ivy, if you spray it and kill it, it's still toxic, right, to your skin and everything?
So it does take a little bit of time for the oils to break down. Eventually, the poison ivy, especially the stems, will no longer be active. But you're going to have to wait like at least a week or so before the oils break down. So that the contact that people get in the fall with poison ivy leaves usually comes from raking those leaves up and then taking them off site. It occurs less when you spray them or if you're just out in your yard and around it.
Okay, don't you need to pull them up so they won't propagate next year?
Yes and no. So if you're using a foliar spray to kill the poison ivy, that should kill the poison ivy itself. If you're using something else, if you're not using any kind of a foliar spray for the poison ivy, then definitely just because the leaves have dropped doesn't mean it's dead. You would have to dig those plants out.
And then how do you dispose of it? Do you just put it in with yard waste if you have that pick up? Or?
Yeah, you can do that. You also can leave it in your leaf pile. Eventually it'll break down. It'll go back to being soil.
Oh, okay. And can we go back to tilling for just a moment?
Sure.
Please. Okay, you said till to get rid of the weeds and then wait until you have to till again. What if you tilled once and then covered it up with, sometimes I use old carpet or cardboard. Mm-hmm. If you cover that up over winter, will I still have a problem next year?
a less of a problem. Honestly, if you're going to cover the land, the soil, I wouldn't till it. That if you're covering that soil, it will do the job of what most people set out to do with tilling. So just cover that landscape or that soil area. Don't worry about tilling it.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
thank
Caroline.
You.
All right, we've got one more question, real quick. Doug, you're up next. You got a question, Doug?
Oh yes. I remember sometimes years ago raking up long leaf needles from pine trees and using them in the yard, but I can't remember what I did it for. What purpose was that?
Yeah, so a lot of people will rake up needles or they will acquire needles and they'll use it as mulch. And it actually makes a great mulch. You can also use it in pathways. One of the things that sometimes pine needles especially will do is over time, and it takes a really long time to do this, but over time it will acidify the soil.
All right. That is our final question of this episode of the Garden Hotline. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, thanks as always. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, hope to have you back soon. That's going to do it for today's edition. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in to KMOX.
Set the world right. Find us a dream.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.